Well met, adventurers, and welcome to Mage Productions. My name is Lee. I remembered it this time. Today, we're going to talk about house rules again, because it's a huge topic, and it's fun, and it's interesting, and today I'm joined by...
Joe.
And Brad.
I'm Kyle.
All right.
We got the whole band back together for this
one. Except for Kate. Again.
She doesn't like us. She missed the first house rule, so...
So we excluded her from this one. She didn't choose to leave us for this one.
We left her out.
We excluded her
for
this one.
You just keep telling yourself that.
Hey, sometimes you just gotta...
Mama Kate, we need you.
Indeed.
All right, so we got pretty passionate the last one. We've went over some really cool ones, some mildly interesting ones, some that we didn't like, some that we did like. So who wants to start this one? Brad does.
I'll start with basic. Like, I think the leveling up moment is all done and different at every table I've ever played at. And sometimes it happens in this weird vacuum, and then the players show back up with, wait, where did that come from? How did you do that in between sessions? Like, I feel like the leveling up at the table, or maybe some minimum steps of the leveling up process, should be done at the table in front of everyone. Like, roll your hit points.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or pick your feet so we all understand, and maybe explain the story fit or something. If we're not going to role play it and you're just going to come back with these powers. Like,
the
leveling up moment, I think, needs a house rule to... Everyone enjoyed the experience of leveling up together. I'll say it that way.
I think that's good. I think something else to add on to that that's kind of sort of relevant, but you were talking about, like, last session we left off, everyone leveled up. The next time we come back, Joe's character does some crazy stuff, and everyone's like, what are you doing?
Do that. Yeah.
So
how'd you know how to do that?
Yeah.
Right.
But so third-party materials... I know something that I would like to do for next campaign is not allow them and only do published things. Because third-party Sid, Joe's character, pretty much broke the game.
Right there with you. Yeah. I had the third-party material.
Right.
I'm the one that used it, and I'm sitting here going, oh my God.
Well,
like,
God powers.
Should I looked at it, I reviewed
should
it,
I redact
and I was
like,
this that sounds
like
awesome.
Let's
do it.
A different feat?
Yeah. But
like that's literally the reason I didn't improve my deck score anymore.
Right.
Because every time the deck score went up, I got another attack.
Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm over here thinking, how does he keep rolling die? I just
got
to read more about this fifth edition stuff.
In initiative, Sid would come up and everybody would like...
All right, I'm going to go get food. We're run down to the convenience store.
Bathroom.
Right.
Yeah, it was...
Yes.
But back to the leveling up. So I agree. Like, having some type of in-game whatever for it is cool. Now, when someone levels up, they finish this encounter, I have the right amount of XP to be this level. Are you now this level? Do you automatically have your hit points? Do you automatically have this so when you walk down the hall and get into another fight, you have all of that available?
Are you saying pause the game session?
Or do you
that
have to
night?
Wait?
Or rest?
Exactly. I've had it kind of go both ways. Like, you have kind of that video game, I slayed this monster, yay, level up, I regained hit points
right,
or whatever and this and that. Or do you do it, and then you don't get those effects until you take a long rest?
I like that. I think that's pretty cool.
Sure.
The way I've always played
it,
the leveling
like
up moment,
sense.
It's hard to do. There's some big decisions to make, and to slow down and stop the game session for everyone at the table, for someone to level up real quick, to keep... No, I would say no. It would be my vote.
But if you wait till the rest, then, you know, you're all there, you're not in action, then you can go through it.
I don't even know if I'm up with that. As long as you've already made all your decisions and can put them in writing or into D&D Beyond within, you know, 2 minutes, don't make me sit here and watch you level up for 25 minutes.
Well, the cool thing
with
D&D Beyond,
that's true.
I don't really want to do that as a player.
The cool thing with D&D Beyond is it'll literally spell it all out for you right there.
That is true.
You want this, this, or this. Pick one.
Yeah,
cool.
And it can make it faster.
How about this or this? Pick it now.
I would prefer actual leveling up decisions being made between sessions, regardless of
I'm cool with that.
Gameplay.
I could see both sides of it. I could see both sides.
I mean, that's one of those things where, like, 10 minutes into a 4-hour game, oh, I hit the XP, I leveled up, but I don't get to use any of it this game?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That sucks.
In that case, I do think there is some conversation on maybe if you're that close and you talk to the dungeon master, you're like, I'm going to hit it in the session, and you go ahead and pre-plan the what are you going to hit.
Right.
And everyone knows he's going to hit it.
I think that's happened to just about everybody in our last campaign, and everyone's been like, so I'm like five away. Can I just level up before next game? And I've been like, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But I would like to know, as a fellow player at the table, like, okay, what happened between sessions or while you were sleeping? What did you wake up with? This
What's the rationale? So,
right, give me some story.
You want to see more stuff like level 3 fighter picks Eldritch Knight. I'm not just now on Eldritch Knight. Like, I had to go do this and learn this and go through all of this to be able to have this power now.
I think that adds a lot of interestingness to the campaign, but it's also like we're in a dungeon crawl in the middle of nowhere, and we've gotten 2 levels, but you don't know any new spells because you haven't gone talk to the Grandmaster Spell Dude. Or you don't know any of these new abilities of your class because you haven't talked to that person. I think both situations are...
Yeah, I think we could make it fit either way. Because you could also say, well, I had this other spellbook that I didn't really understand what that third page was, but I finally clicked last night.
I get it now.
So I've been carrying it and doing nothing. It's been dead weight. So you could play it either way.
Yeah, so with things like that, you'd be like, you know, I've had this book. I've been looking over it and looking over it and reading through it. And it was just kind of whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I guess I finally looked through it enough. It's like, okay, I get it. Like, that makes sense now. And then all of a sudden, I was able to do this.
Right. Now, look, watch this, guys. Yeah. I want a little bit of the story.
So just some kind of story behind your level up.
Yeah. Just a little quick intro. I don't want to take too much time. Tell me why you're doing that now.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan for that. I really like the RP aspect of everything. So, yeah, definitely.
I think that's something to consider as a house rule.
Well, I another thing to go off that is XP. Do you prefer getting that number at the end of the fight? Or do you
every
like...
Every encounter?
Right, every encounter, and keep up with it. Or do you like the milestones of...
Yeah,
like you've reached this part of whatever.
I think it depends on the campaign. So we'll do that caveat first, you know, how the Dungeon Master is running it. But from our experience last campaign, I'd probably just like the milestone. You just tell me when I hit it. Hit the story beat, drop me enough XP, however you want to do it. You can just say it's there.
And that kind of lets you fudge things, too. I feel like the milestones.
It does.
Can be like, man, I know these guys are like level 5 or level 4 or whatever, and they're about to hit this, and it'd be a whole lot easier if they're at level 5. But they're like not even halfway through.
There was an epic fight with a red dragon, and nobody leveled up after that. Like, I feel like you would have learned some stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather play it that way.
Right. Feel more stronger than you did going in there.
Yeah. Like,
you know, after you recover from death.
Yeah.
Lose your hands and then gain them back.
Well, when are we talking house rules?
We're already
at a table that the players trust each other, or you're not going to agree to these random house rules. I'm not just going to walk into
a comic store and play
with random strangers that accept their house rules. It's probably not ever going to happen. But if you're at a trusted table at a home game, you already trust your dungeon master, and house rules should...
I feel like that's a lot of what house rules are.
Yeah.
It's a trust that this is going to happen fairly on both sides. Mm-hmm. I expect this of you, but you're going to get this in return.
Right.
And if you don't have that kind of trust, that's when house rules don't work at all.
I think it's also like we've been playing together, like as a group, physically, you guys here that are talking with me for 2 years now.
Yeah, at least.
Almost 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brad's the youngest of our group.
Even though he's the oldest?
Even though he's the oldest. But so, but we know...
It's kind of funny, because technically I'm the oldest of the group, even though I'm the youngest.
Yeah. Oh, yay.
Age. You should act your age.
Great. But
Right back at you.
We know how we play together, and we can base our house rules off of that, because I know that we will all kind of respect that, and I know what works for us, so milestones may work better for how we all play.
Right.
There's that knowledge there. Yeah. And without that, like, I don't know how these random people at Dragon Con are going to play, so I can't be like...
Let's do rules as written on that game.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or if you go to your, you know, your comic book shop, because they have, you know, Adventurers League. You know, how does that work for
you? Yeah. Well, Adventurers League, you cannot...
You don't do house rules.
Sorry. I misspoke. Right. Or if you
I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean.
See, the other cool thing about house rules... is if there's an issue, you start out playing with a house rule. If there is an issue, you can be like, all right, guys, I really don't feel like this is working.
Right.
Yeah. You can change the house rule.
Well, you can change rules as written, too. That's kind of the point.
Absolutely.
House rules. Like, this rule is
written. You just overrule the rule written.
Yeah. This doesn't work for us.
I literally just read something today on Twitter. Let me see if I can find it. Well,
while you're doing that, another one that I think is an underused mechanic that I really enjoy, having played, you know, 30 plus years of Dungeons and Dragons, is the inspiration mechanic.
Yes.
Yes.
I really like it. I feel like we never use it at our table.
It's been extremely underutilized.
So I think we should house rule an inspiration mechanic.
I think we should too. How should we do that? What should we do? Let's do it right now.
I would give it to everyone instead of leaving it to the Dungeon Master. The Dungeon Master has so much on his plate to carry the story and the combats and the stats that he forgets about it. I forget about it when I'm running games, right?
Yeah, I can.
But if players could hand out inspiration, maybe we say some caveats of these conditions, players can hand out inspiration to each other.
Right.
And we all agree, that's fair, because you want to maybe encourage better role-playing. So, all right, that was great. And
it's going to take a lot to impress Kyle's role-playing standards.
Exactly.
You're making me blush, fellas.
Well, but for real, like...
Well, and maybe that's it. Maybe whoever gets
the starting
die, the inspiration die itself, like... Mm-hmm. Maybe that's like the trophy you come away with. Like, all right, you're the best role player last night, so you start with the inspiration die next game.
And
like, I'm bringing it and setting it on the table. I get to hand it out. I'm the first to hand it.
I think I tried something like that before of, like, I gave...
You gave it, then let it pass.
I gave it to Kyle for sacrificing his hands to the dragon.
And then I had to give it away next.
And then
next,
you had to give it to the next person, who then had to give it to the next person, but...
Yeah.
I mean, even for you guys, even for players, like, that's a lot to remember.
It is. Maybe it's maybe you can get to, like, the physical house rules. Maybe it's just a giant fuzzy cube, so it's sitting in the middle of the table.
Well,
you don't forget it. It's
so
the fuzzy die.
One rule that I saw that somebody uses is there's a D20 inside of a box in the middle of the table that before each game, like, somebody shakes it and puts it back down, and you roll... And you can choose the dice in the box or your roll.
Wow. The dice in the box is already on a 20?
You don't know what it's on.
Oh, that's cool.
It's blind.
I like that.
But if you choose the dice in the box, you have to have the dice in the box. And then once it's chosen, like say I chose it for my roll, and it's whatever and I succeed, and I'm like, yeah, okay. I would then shake it again and then put it back down.
It's cool.
Like, it always exists.
So it's like,
I like that.
A luck element that you can just trade
right.
in.
You can
I
just
bad
trade
luck
it
on
in.
That roll, but it may be worse.
It could be worse.
It could be worse. It could be worse. But
probably a house rule, you can't trade in a crit fail.
Right. I wouldn't.
Right.
You can't trade in a crit fail, and you can only do it once per session.
Sure.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
I think something like that would
but
be
inspiration,
good.
Though?
No, he's talking about the...
No,
the
dice
in the box.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's... Almost like inspiration, but not.
Yes, maybe that's
kinda.
A nice.
I think it would be interesting to try.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know if it would work, but it'd be interesting. Probably like after three fails, everybody'd be like, "This sucks. We shouldn't do this anymore."
I keep getting the ones out of the box.
Right. Yeah, they called it Schrodinger's die.
Nice.
Okay. Schrodinger's die. I love
Caps
it.
Lock cap. Sent that in.
I like that. Okay.
Very nice.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that one a lot.
What's another suggestion they offered us?
I'm looking through the list and see what I can find.
In reality, this just gives you more options, which is always nice. Yeah.
I can't find the thing that I was looking for, but basically it was one of the dudes from Wizards that writes rules, and he literally said, the rules are there. That's not what D&D is about, though.
Yeah, right.
Like, it has to fit your game. The rules are there to change.
That was Jeremy Crawford. Yeah.
Yes! That's who it was. It's like, if your table works better by doing this, but the book says this, do this!
For sure.
Here's one that was sent in that I don't personally like.
Okay. Uh-oh. Is it about a dwarf?
I wouldn't.
Oh!
I'll never live this down.
No.
No.
Any dice that lands on the floor is always a one.
Wow.
No sloppy dice play.
So that's your D20, that's your D6, that's your D4. Any dice that you were rolling that falls off the table is considered a one.
That's, yeah.
I don't know, because that really depends. Like, I would have to have enough room to be able to roll the dice. Not like we've had six players around a circular table before that was meant for four.
That's very
and you're literally crammed in there like with your book, and you're rolling on your book to have room to roll your dice. Mm-hmm. You're gonna get half your dice in the floor at that point.
Right. I don't personally like it, but we also don't have a problem of like throwing dice across the room. Right.
Plus, we sit at this really nice, well-made table with dice guard.
Yeah.
Even this lip sometimes it still gets a little bouncy.
It does. It does.
I can see if you're like you had a dice tray or something like that, and you're rolling in a dice tray, and you just throw those things hard enough in there that they bounce out and then roll across the table and roll on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. It might be a controlling rule if someone's being a douchebag at the table.
If you got someone who's doing it more all the time.
I think it's more
it's
crowd control.
Yeah, it's crowd control. Right. Another interesting one that I saw that I kind of follow, didn't really realize it was a house roll, spell scrolls. So, rules is written, you can only cast a spell scroll if you are of that class and level able to cast that spell.
Yeah, I've noticed. You've got to scroll read it.
Exactly. That's what I've always been in. This one is saying anyone can use a spell scroll with a significantly high enough arcane check.
I like the arcane check.
Okay. I think that's cool.
I could get behind that.
So that keeps it from, I'm just going to do this.
Right.
You can try to kind of somewhat know what I'm doing to do this.
You can't be a complete doofus. Right.
I'm a barbarian with an intelligence of 3, but I'm going to read
just
this.
Just
because
you read it doesn't
spell.
Mean it's going to happen.
That's when you need that critical hit skill check.
Now, if you're trying to talk about
a 20,
good roll on a 20
from our last cultural conversation.
Right. Now, if you have a firebolt,
so you're saying there's a chance.
Right.
But if you have a firebolt spell, does that arcane check lessen as opposed to say a true polymorph?
Oh, totally. Right. As a DM, I would definitely set the DC depending on the level of spell that it is.
Right.
Yeah. If it's something of cantrip level versus
I like that house rule.
Level 9 spell, there's got to be some give and take there of difficulty or ease of use of it, at least. Something else that I thought was a lot of fun of if you're blinded in combat, you are not allowed to look at the table. You have to turn around.
Wow. Oh. Well, getting a little LARPy, but I like it.
It's...
Yeah.
I mean, my character is blind. I know that in like 30 squares in front of me, there is a dude.
I think it matters a lot if you're playing with miniatures on a map.
Yes.
It matters very little
to
the speaker of the mind.
Or break.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll close my eyes. Like, it's all in my head anyway.
Sure. We're just describing this.
Theater of the mind. But I could see it being really impactful if you're playing battle mats and miniatures.
But if you're blinded, it's a disadvantage as you attack in game. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, it's funny. I think it might be interesting to watch from, you know, if I was not
right.
Oh yeah, it's
at Dragon Con that might make for some interesting events. Ooh. But
yeah,
I don't think that will go over very well at Dragon Con.
It depends on your table, man.
It all
depends on your table. Con gaming, I think, is something that is
of my
a different subject.
Would not have gone for it.
Mm. Yeah. Anything else that you guys can think of that really sparks your fancy?
I've been kicking around one that maybe we'll talk about. I don't have the actual mechanics built out yet, but I played board game Gloomhaven.
Right.
And one of the mechanics in there is prosperity of the town, the city.
Hmm.
And the prosperity of that, whatever, town, city, region, is impactful on what equipment is available there and the cost of it. And I kind of like that thought, and I was like, well, there may be an opportunity to add that as a house rule, especially if we're world building here. So what's the prosperity of this town today, and we go out on an adventure, we come back, has it gone up or down, monsters impacted or not?
Right.
Maybe our success brings success to the region and notoriety, and then we now have access to common magic items. Or
exactly. Well, it gives more meaning and help to... offering these places your assistance and giving them...
Correct.
Like...
You see, that's where I almost feel like it shouldn't even have to be a house
rule. Yeah.
That it's more the world building element. Feels like that should just be...
Yeah.
That's how the world works.
Right.
It is how the world works.
But a lot of the times when you're doing this, you don't think about that. Whoa. Specifically as the DM going, well, they just helped this place out. It should be a little bit better off now.
Usually you go into like, hey, I'm going to the town and I'm going to go to the general store.
Yeah.
Here's the player's handbook equipment list. And it's like, you've got everything. Yeah. Like, wait a minute. This town's not at that level yet.
Yeah.
You've only got...
That's where that level of world building comes in, where I've actually put thought into this place. I know what this town's like. This is a dump town. It's two steps above a ghost town.
Yeah.
They've got...
they've got no plate mail here.
A couple of horseshoes, maybe a banged-up shield and a rusted sword.
I can't get my dwarven thrower in this village.
But if you knew, if you're a player in that game, and you knew that you could change that by your actions, you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to work to make this town better.
Yeah,
I also think that's something easier in, like, a homebrew world like ours.
Right.
Sure, totally. If you're bumping around in Storm King's Thunder...
Hard to play that way.
It's
in
a little
realm.
Harder.
Yeah.
It's a little harder in the realms.
Yeah, yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah. Something else that was interesting was dark vision is not a racial benefit. It is a feat that you have to take.
That'd be a cool option.
I like that.
So how do you gain dark vision, then?
You take the feat.
Yeah, but like, role play.
Yeah.
I'm a human.
Right.
Now I can see in the dark.
Well,
I'm a human, and now I can just see in the dark.
I will not allow anyone to take a feat if they cannot explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on you, not me.
Nice.
But then that...
Oh!
Yeah.
That
but really.
Literally eliminates dark vision.
So
from every
magic, some type of magical means.
Well, you gotta go to a prison.
Where you spend a lot of time in caves and dungeons.
Right, we're going back
to... And then you
gotta
find a guy in that prison and give him, what was it, like,
nah, I don't like
three
it.
Cigarettes and an egg or something
we're
like
going
that?
Going back
I
to pitch black.
No, I'm
yeah.
out.
I think it's interesting.
I also want to play Shatterkai Gloomstalker next campaign, so don't take away my dark vision.
I think certain races should kind of automatically have that. But it could be a feat.
It depends on world building.
For the other races.
Also, I think dark vision is really underplayed at the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can see 30 feet in front of you in black and white. In like grays.
By the time you describe it to those who do have dark vision, those without it hear it anyway.
It's whatever.
It is a weird played mechanic.
And then it gets to a point where it's like, okay, I have to explain this to the level, and it can get tedious.
Yeah.
And then in battle, it becomes like an element of chaos. Like, arrows just flow at you. Where? Who? Why?
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, you've got... So, going to my lovely dwarven friends, the Durgar, they are the color of stone. If they're standing still up against a wall in complete darkness, sure, you might be able to see 30 feet in front of you, but can you make out that that's a...
Not really.
Like, maybe with a decent perception check, but even at that point, like, I think the color bit is underused.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think fast here. As a player, if my dungeon master took away my dark vision as a natural race ability, I'd want something back.
I don't
want to just see in the dark. I want advantage in the dark, or give me some other mechanic.
You get like 120 as opposed to 60. All
right, so you made me go earn it, then I get an extra perk than just being able to see.
Maybe
you
get color.
Whatever.
Right. But something else. Something to make
either
it a little more...
Or balance it out at the beginning with the race, too.
Yeah.
Like, this was something that was given as a benefit to this race.
I'd have to exchange
I need something else
slot,
for this
right.
race. Like, you just handicap this, and then you get real heavy into homebrew.
We didn't have dark vision in the campaign, did we?
We did not have dark vision in the campaign. Well,
it depended on what
depended
continent
on where you
were.
Came
okay.
from. Yes.
But we started, we all knew that.
From Shimmerwind, there was no dark
vision. There was no dark vision in Shimmerwind. Yeah.
Okay.
It's raining.
So what do you guys feel about instances where you actually might lose a level? Whether that's, you know, coming back from the dead, or...
I think that's rough.
It is rough.
It used to be that way in the old days, before you guys started playing D&D.
I don't know about losing a level.
Losing levels was a thing in early D&D, for sure. I dealt with it, and it sucked.
I think it really did.
As a player.
It depends on the situation. It really depends on the situation. I'm not opposed to looking into how to properly implement that in a way that isn't like
I feel the way the game's evolved and the way the current 5th edition is played, it would really upset the players.
Yes.
It would.
It really would.
That wasn't a request. Honestly, it was just an idea.
No. Yeah. Oh, I know.
Honestly,
I know.
About the only way I could see that kind of working would be kind of back to that other house rule from last time that Kyle was talking about with the, if your body's completely destroyed, you come back as something different.
Yeah.
Okay.
You come back at, you know, you were an elf, you came back as an orc, but now you're a level lower because you don't know how to use this body.
That'd be cool.
So you don't know how to do all of these things. Mm-hmm. Like, you might have been a level 7 fighter as an elf, but now you're not quite because you're bigger, you move different, things are different from you. I could see it that way.
I could see it as a player. I multiclassed, and I didn't like it. Take away a level. Let me go back and pick a different multiclass
that's
next time.
Wow.
So you're like, please let me lose that level.
Yeah.
So I want to go a different path now because that combo stonk.
That was terrible.
So basically drop your experience back down. If you're running experience, be like, oh yeah, I got to 34,000. I picked this. No, bump me back down to 28,000. Let me gain that $6,000 again.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to do something different.
So
now that's like
I could see that as a
player
choice.
Could,
yeah.
Okay, I'm ready, DM. I made a mistake. Have it impact me. I'll pick again.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know. Trying to make it work. Otherwise, it'd suck.
Yeah,
yeah.
I agree.
Right.
Because it almost puts you so far behind everybody else.
Right. It
with
will.
How those milestones
you
work.
You really,
really
want to reset.
Really
yeah.
Yeah, you've got to really want it. You've got to really want it. Last one.
Sure.
Magic components.
Nah.
I don't like them.
Why not?
Too grindy.
Very grindy.
You're talking about the material components to casting a spell. Okay.
Right.
I mean, like, I played in the games where every little detail mattered. It's like,
yeah. Like in our last campaign, we had the magic rings and whatnot. And it was like, okay, I have this magic ring that can do things. I should just be able to shoot this frost from my magic ring. But no, I have to have these white chips.
The bone
and like
chip,
Kyle,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had to have like chunks of obsidian or something. Like, where
are
we getting chunks of obsidian?
Yeah,
you literally you gave me this awesomeness and then told me I can't use it because obsidian doesn't exist.
Yeah, I like the spell focus. Like, you gotta have your thing.
I think that's fine.
I think
that's fine.
That's fine, but the individual
I think for
components.
Some of the bigger spells, maybe.
I could get that with, like, resurrection spells.
Like, rituals and stuff.
Ritual
to, like,
spells, things like that. Absolutely.
Those that take a minute or 10 minutes to cast.
Yes. But if it's, like, I think anything instantaneous.
One action.
Or one action.
Yeah.
Because, hang on. On my turn here, my 6 seconds, let me get in my pouch here and pull out my feather and my vial of gargoyle spit and da-da-da-da-da and mix them all together
spit.
And throw them at
hard to
you
get
real
that.
Quick.
It is hard to get
must
that
be a big spell.
Spit. Yeah.
What about if they're not, like, innately a spellcaster? Like, could a fighter cast it with the right material components?
Well, that's kind of what I was going for with the rings, is that, so, you as an individual have a body and soul that is connected to the world in some form of magic, right? Mm-hmm. The ring was a conductor of that. And in order to conduct that, you needed some assistance to kind of give it to that, if that's the white chips or the obsidian or whatever. Not saying it was the best idea. Not saying it went really well. But, like, just to gain that association of, like, you don't just have a lightsaber ring because, like, do Jedis have to, like, is there a charge port?
No, lightsaber's forever.
Like,
it's
a stone. It's just a crystal.
But it, but
exactly.
the force is always in that crystal, so it's like a stone. That stone is the generator of the power. So
well, I'm
yeah,
not
spell focus.
I'm not. Yeah, not saying that. I was saying it's not like a lightsaber.
Right.
It needs that focus. It needs that extra kind of something in order to provide that link to.
And that makes sense, too,
because
the Kyber Crystal had the Force and blah, blah, blah. We're nerding out too much right now.
I don't know Star Wars.
Don't say that.
Oh, no.
I don't know Star Wars.
Can we end this episode now?
Visit us online at mageproductions.com. Leave us a review if you like this episode. I don't watch Star Wars.
Tell us some of your favorite rules that you use in your games as well.
There you go. Anything else?
Goodbye. That was good. Have a nice time.
I love you.